everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two wonderful sponsors for you this week. One of them is the SaaS Summit, an online conference all about everybody's favorite syntastically awesome style sheets. It's coming up November 18th and 19th. Go to sassummit.com and use coupon code SHOPTALKSHOW for 25% off. And lynda.com, the world's largest online learning resource. Go to lynda.com/shoptalk for all kinds of learning resources. We'll tell you more about both those things later in the show. But for now, Dave, do the honors. Kick us off.
There, Shopomaniacs, you're listening to a special episode of the Shop Talk Show. This week, we are kind of a deep dive panel on inline styles. Chris, ad blocking. That was the last panel. Chris, what do you got for us?
Well, it's going to be an interesting show. I guess the overall topic is ad blocking, but I just want to have some people on from different perspectives that are related to this larger conversation. So I think, Dave, early on when we were talking about doing this show, your concept is maybe we'll call it the blocked, the blocker, and the blockee, and we'll get people on, you know, people from the publishing world, people from the ad network world, people like, you know, users like me and you who either use or don't use ad blockers, and just so we can have hopefully kind of a nuanced conversation about this topic. It kind of came up recently. I don't know. I think we're a few weeks past a kind of a fever pitch moment of talking about ad blocking. So before we get any further into that, I think I'd like to introduce our panel. We have Mr. Vitaly Friedman from, you may know him from Smashing Magazine. Hey, Vitaly.
Hi. Hi, Chris. Hi, guys. Nice to meet you. Nice to be here. It's always great to be on the show.
Yay, wonderful. Yeah, we've had Vitaly on before. I have Lydia Lawrenson. Hello, Lydia.
Hey, how's it going?
Super good. And Todd Garland. How you doing, Todd?
Good, guys. How's it going?
Good. So I think it would be interesting to talk about who these people are and what our different perspectives are before we start really getting into the grit of the advertising and publishing world a little bit. So Vitaly, like I said, we know him from Smashing Magazine, which is probably the oldest part of the Smashing empire, right? The kind of the website that we all know and love, but more recently has been into diversifying ways in which the Smashing empire makes money by through publishing literal physical books and conferences and stuff, right? You want to introduce that world to us?
Yes. So basically, just to cut to the chase, we've been seeing advertising on decline for many, many years now. It's kind of always the same story. We try to kind of add more slots and add units to the site, and then it becomes more bloated. And then we see that advertising isn't really working, especially for, well, in terms of finances, is the most important part of our business. But we see that it's not really working in terms of user engagement. People don't engage as much as they used to be. And we also see the huge increase of ad blocker usage from the site as well.
Okay, so you're just going right into it here. No, I just wanted to just lay a little bit of groundwork. It's interesting that you have all this data, but if people aren't familiar or whatever, you are smashingmagazine.com, and you're talking about largely the display advertising that's happening on that site. And you said you've seen it on the decline for years.
We don't really have sponsored content, and it's kind of our editorial policy not to have it at any point. Which is why it was important for us to move away from display advertising towards something a bit more stable, I would say, which is in our case products and services. So we produce books, printed books and ebooks. We also run workshops and conferences, and we also do consulting. So it's kind of it's been very important for us to move away from this traditional view of advertising towards something a bit more stable.
Right, so it sounds like Vitaly sees a storm coming and is moving away from that. We'll get into that as we move along here. But Lydia, could you tell us a little bit about your background and what you've done and what you're doing now? And
yeah, absolutely. So I've had a pretty checkered past, one might say. I started my career in game design, and I've done a bunch of community activism in the past. And eventually I sort of transitioned into doing, like being very interested in internet communities and digital media and social media. For a while, I had an indie blog that I kind of supported myself with, largely through book sales, royalties, and speaking engagements. And ultimately, I moved towards doing content strategy and user research and sort of general media strategy, social, whatever, for publishing companies and social media companies and whoever kind of was interested in my services out here in Silicon Valley where I live. So I've worked for a variety of social platforms, web projects, and publications. And right now, I am really, really happy to be working full-time for News Deeply, which makes in-depth information resources about issues of global importance. So our flagship website is at syriadeeply.org. That's syriadeeply.org. And after that site was established, it was very successful. The founder actually was invited to the White House to brief Obama, and there was just a lot of like attention paid to this site by major thought leaders. Yeah, absolutely. So it was a very influential site. And she, her name is Laura, and she's an amazing journalist with a great business sense. And she decided that she wanted to scale this in-depth model for news. So we are making more and more of these sites. We have one about Ebola called Ebola Deeply. We have one about the California drought called Water Deeply. And that's kind of our main thing, is we make these super in-depth hubs about major issues. And we're a B Corp, so we take some amount of philanthropic funding as well as brand sponsorships. And we do have venture funding. We have seed funding. But another side of our profit model is that we do content strategy projects, essentially, for certain clients. So sometimes we might be working with someone who might be interested in sponsoring one of our existing Deeply sites or might want to make their own site, and we just help them make that site. And so we don't currently actually have any advertising revenue in the traditional sense of the word. We don't have display ads on any of our properties. We've talked about it, but it's the kind of thing where in the current media landscape, you know, it's just kind of like, are we really going to invest in this when we could be trying to invest in more sustainable revenue streams? And so the issues that we talk about a lot are, you know, what would sponsored content mean to us if we implemented it? How do we maintain kind of the church and state boundary between our publications and our sponsors? How can we best offer clients what they need, as well as protecting the editorial integrity of our sites, both real and perceived in the eyes of the public? So that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So again, I mean, we'll put links to this stuff in there, but this Syria Deeply and these other branch off Deeply sites are super interesting. It's kind of like it's definitely where you should go if you're trying to bone up on these things. It's really is kind of a different news model, isn't it? Kind of it's just a more welcoming.
So. I mean, and we've kind of been greeted as the future of news. Like actually, Time Magazine called us the future of news a bit back. I think that I'm really passionate about News Deeply. Like, I'm not the CEO, I'm not the founder, but I am very aligned with what the company is doing. It's very similar to what I was doing with my blog when I was an indie blogger. I was just trying to go super deep on an issue and do the best job that I possibly could for my readers in knowing that topic as well as I could. And I think that there is a niche for this in the media landscape. It's just a real challenge figuring out how to do that. And when you're operating a lot of niche sites that are reaching thought leaders and, you know, people who have a lot of influence but aren't necessarily reaching scale, ads isn't necessarily the best model for that. So I've been watching the ad controversy and the ad situation with a lot of interest because it is relevant to a lot of my friends and a lot of my, you know, former clients from before I worked with News Deeply. But it doesn't directly affect
us. It sounds like you're trying to avoid that fight at all. It seems like it's a problem, so I'm just going to stay out of it, in a sense. And then Todd is our representative from the middleman, in a sense. Is that what you would say? Todd comes from Buy Sell Ads, and maybe introduce what that is and how you fit into this picture?
Yeah, sure thing. So for about 8 years now, you know, we've been working to connect people who are producing content and advertisers who are looking to reach the people who the content producers are producing the content for, and basically connect the two parties. We live and breathe the free web, and on the free web, advertising is a long time tried and tested and very legitimate currency that keeps much of the web free. I think with all the ad block stuff going on, you know, our general feelings, I guess, to let you know kind of where we stand is, whenever we see blood in the water, we're like sharks and we smell opportunity. And so, we genuinely believe that all of the debate going on around ad blocking is really good. And ultimately, it's going to lead to some more innovation, some better, I'd say, probably restrictions or standards. We work with a lot of quality publishers. We work with Shop Talk Show, even. We support, indie publishers, which is what I consider you guys, all the way up to, much larger companies like NPR, Pocket, AOL even, actually just came on board this week, The Atlantic. We kind of run the gamut from indie all the way up to super large, and we build tools that help folks automate the process of getting those deals done with advertisers, as well as actually representing them and going out there and making sales for them.
Uh-huh. And it's through a variety of products, right? Like for the classic one that maybe people immediately think of when they think of buy sell ads is, just through, maybe you have been to CSSTricks.com. There's display advertising on that site. If you want to buy it, you got to go through buy sell ads and use your interface and add it to a shopping cart and check out and buy what you want to buy. That's kind of the core of buy sell ads, but you also have, like you said, you are the ad representative for Shop Talk Show, which is through syndicate ads, which just kind of feels like a separated thing from buy sell ads.
Yeah, we're
which
definitely
is kind of content sponsorship, which we can get into.
Yeah, we're definitely experimenting with a lot of stuff. We're definitely not like strictly display ads. We do a lot of sponsored content. We even run our own, I guess you could call it a network. That reaches designers and developers, the largest one on the web. We're definitely, playing around with a lot of things ad related and trying to do our part in moving things forward and, trying to find a way out of this whole ad block hole. So
ad blocking is the topic at hand here. And I guess we should say that I think this most recent round of talking about it has stemmed from probably the iOS 9 dropping, and there's add-ons that Apple has decided to allow there's essentially ad blockers for iOS in the apps. And that's what kind of, I don't know, has got people talking about it recently, but it's not like ad blocking is brand new technology. There's the big ones probably are Adblock, which I was looking around, claims to have 40 million installs on desktop browsers. And then there's Adblock Plus, which apparently those two things aren't related to each other, who claim to have something like 300 million downloads. You can look around at data. It's looking like, 40-some% of Americans have it installed, 15%, there's data all over the place. But ad blocking on the desktop is pretty huge. Ad blocking on mobile is growing like crazy. There's also an app called Ghostry that does stuff, and we can talk more in depth about individual things, but it was really the iOS ones that have kind of been fueling this a bit, which kind of makes sense because people, I think, are probably the most upset about advertising on mobile because of how gross it got so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I think my favorite commentary about this issue, I actually read a really fantastic article about this months and months ago before the storm even broke, by a gentleman who used to work for The Guardian Tech, and he's been tracking this issue, for like a decade or two. And he made the excellent point that in print, back in those days, publishers had a lot more control over how ads acted and behaved in their publications. It was like the advertiser would give you the ad and then you would like lay it out on the page, and they would probably push for certain concessions, like some amount of size or whatever, as part of the negotiating process. But it wasn't the situation that you have now, where literally you have publishers who install some advertisers' code on their website and they can't control that code. And they might have an agreement with the publisher that the code won't do something, but the code might do that thing anyway, either because of the advertiser or because of someone else, because it got hacked, like anything like that. And it just makes for a really different issue, you know, for publishers. And I think it's really interesting that so many publishers right now are kind of trying to shift the blame for this a little bit, or like shift the responsibility, and are trying to make this moral case for, like, you know, our users should be willing to watch these ads because it's what keeps us afloat. When the reality is that those same publishers could have been pushing for ads that weren't a terrible user experience this whole time. But they kind of didn't feel able to do that for whatever reason. So it's tough, you know? It's like, I have a lot of sympathy for them, but it reminds me of all the other little, like, kind of get-rich-quick bubbles that we've seen in digital media. Like, the people who made SEO-optimized sites that didn't have any good content failed as Google decided to fight back. Like, the people who made social-optimized sites that had clickbaity headlines, but not very good content, failed when Facebook decided that they weren't going to tolerate that on their platform anymore. And, you know, like, in the end, the user, if you're making something that the user just won't use, you can't win. And it just amazes me that people keep missing this lesson and keep thinking that they can, like, ride these trains forever.
I think it's actually a very valid point, if I may jump in at this point. Because I feel that right now we're in this position where users kind of feel that they have to protect themselves from advertising. And it wasn't like that, I think, like 4 or 5 years ago. It's just that advertising has become in some way more intrusive, I would say. And it's basically because, well, people tend to ignore advertising a lot and they're pretty good at it, right? And you think about it, so the advertising we had maybe in the 60s, 70s, this model when you actually have a publisher working intensely with the advertiser to actually craft the copy, craft the advertiser ad, actually put it in the right context within a given paper or magazine, that makes perfect sense. I mean, in that case, actually, it would be just great to have an ad like this. And there are some independent publishers that do exactly that. One of them is offline or off-canvas magazine, where this is exactly the point. They don't allow any publishers to actually submit their ads. Instead, they actually ask for logo and they ask for branding and they ask for the story they want to tell. And then they actually write the copy for themselves, right? And they put it in the magazine, off-screen magazine. And Kai just puts a copy that he writes. The advertisers have no influence on it. And of course, it doesn't put advertisers in a bad light, right? But this is perceived very differently than, let's say, just a display ad that gets ignored. I think that this is very important. And we just reached this point where where users feel that they need to protect themselves to get to this faster web, to get to secure web, because most of the time, without ad blocker, the web is just way too slow, especially on mobile, right? So I kind of have sympathy for those users. It's not like they're kind of killing our business. It's maybe their way to protect themselves against, you know, what we have on the web today, what we actually, how we created the web today. It's both our publisher's web fault and advertiser's fault, I think.
So just to kind of set the stage here, because there's a lot of, like, fear, like, what do you guys believe these users are actually protecting themselves from?
Isn't this, this is interesting. I think that there's a bunch of categories here. There's a user uses, and I think it muddies the conversation a bit. There's the visual cruft, right? Like, I don't even like to look at advertising. There's advertising all over the site and it looks like hell, so I'm just going to block it. That's kind of maybe the top reason, but there's also speed, which would probably be my argument. Like, I want my websites to load faster, so I'm going to block things in which to increase the speed. Then there's the whole issue of privacy and tracking. There's, like, I don't know what these advertisers are doing, so I'm going to install an ad blocker because I don't want to be tracked, whatever that means. And then there's a couple more slightly less categories but are still very relevant, which is I want to protect my data usage, and perhaps that's because I'm paying for bandwidth by the megabyte or something. And then I want to protect my phone. I want to reduce the battery life or increase the battery life of my phone by running these blockers. So it's kind of like those five categories. The biggest one probably being, like, God, can we clean up the garbage looking all over the web? So, I mean, did you have a follow-up thought, Todd, with the...
No, I was just trying to get an understanding, because like I feel like a lot of the discussion around Adblock tends to like delve into privacy, and like a lot of people stand up and say, well, I just want more privacy, but like they don't actually truly understand like whether or not like they're leaking any sort of information that's private to them. They just have this general fear around that, which I think is not an illegitimate point for those folks to make. But I mean, like, you know, the thing we have to understand here is that like ad blocking companies, like they're companies, they're businesses, they make money as well. And so, you know, in some ways there are folks out there that are, you know, dressing this up or dressing themselves up as though they are, you know, these Robin Hoods in the seat is out there to save all of us. but like their business is making money just from the exact opposite side, from advertising, right?
Yeah. And I mean, and now we're seeing these really interesting effects where like ad blockers are starting to, there was a really funny quote that I saw on Twitter the other day. They were commenting, you guys probably already know this, but Adblock, the biggest ad blocking plugin, got acquired. And after, like, especially in the wake of their acquisition, but they were already doing this a little bit. They've been whitelisting certain ads from companies that they think, you know, are okay to advertise for whatever reason. And I mean, largely often because those companies are directly paying Adblock to have their ads whitelisted. And so the comment that I saw on Twitter was like, wow, the conversion of ad blockers into an extortion-based business is fascinating.
Totally.
No, I'm just thinking that in general, I think that we are maybe pushing advertising a bit too hard at times. This is actually why we have this main problem with ad blocking, why it's on the rise. If it was a bit more, a bit less, well, how would I put it best, less aggressive maybe. If it went on, was not blocking rendering, which was not pushing very hard, and we didn't have that many pop-ups. If the advertisers and publishers could agree on maybe a little more subtle model, where you could actually prioritize content and prioritize the loading of the content, rendering of the content, and then actually have advertising kicking in, it would not be such a big deal, I think. I'm pretty sure that many people would be willing to accept advertising if everything else was just fine, if it wasn't that loaded. I think this is kind of a general reason why people actually turn to advertisers, to ad blockers, just because they feel like they have to do it to save bandwidth, to, you know, save money in the end and to get better web experience. Just allow me to continue. It's probably the same way, exactly the same way that we tend to use anti-spam filters to avoid spam, right? Maybe it's very similar to some degree.
Well, I mean, you know, to your point about, you know, if advertisers and publishers could agree on something a little more subtle, I mean, like, you know, some of the examples talked about earlier that you were referring to, Vitaly, which was, you know, the very, I guess, publication by publication crafted message and all that kind of stuff. Like, that stuff is great. It doesn't scale. We do a lot of it at Buysell Ads and with our other companies, but like, it's hard on larger companies who typically are the ones that have the most money to spend because it just doesn't scale. But I mean, the entire issue with like, you know, coming to that agreement between an advertiser and a publisher or a publisher and their users with making things more subtle is like the user's not the one paying for the content, right? Like, sure, they're the ones giving up their time and their attention and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, whoever is paying for that is always going to be the one pushing the envelope a little bit. And that's exactly how we got in the situation we're in today. So, I mean, until users are actually paying for the content, like, I just don't see that really, like, working.
So I'm wondering at this point, so users really don't care whether it scales or not, right? They really care about whether they see content fast or not. So the question is, I mean, we tend to, in many cases, I'm not exactly sure how exactly it works now with most publishers, but in many cases, it looks like this. You come to the site, you see maybe a little bit of, you have to wait because you see the layout, and then you see advertising, and then you see content kicking in, right? And this is why I guess many people get annoyed, because they don't want to get advertising first. I'm wondering how much the click rates and the engagement ratio would change if we actually turn it around and actually had the content, the text, actual text, appearing first, advertising later.
Well, Buysell Ads is async, right?
Yeah, it's async.
I'm wondering how would it change, right? Where you would actually make sure that, kind of make it a rule or maybe make it like a script behavior in a way that always loads on DOM content loaded, for example, or on load, I don't know. How would it change? I've never seen any studies doing like where you can actually measure whether it has a big impact or not. And we actually did it on smashing, and we didn't find a like a huge difference, right? So I was wondering if we actually just move everything like beyond this point, where we would actually prioritize content over everything else and then load advertising. This point I want to emphasize not against advertising, right? I think it's really important as well for the industry, because many people who are doing, especially independent people, writing content and publishing, they need some source of income, and it's very difficult to find a sponsor or whatever. So advertising, and yeah, actually the services like BuySell Ads are important. I would love them to thrive, right? I would love them to actually flourish. And so just for us to find a really nice way.
You can sign up. You can sign up anytime.
Always be closing.
But you know what I mean, right? So this is actually the point. I think if we actually push back the advertising and push back the tracking and push back the scripts, maybe we wouldn't have this problem.
There's a URL that's relevant here, and I think this is fascinating. It's a weird part of this whole circle. There's acceptableads.org. It's the Acceptable Ads Manifesto, and there's all these fancy big companies that have signed on to it, and it says, our manifesto is, acceptable ads are not annoying. Acceptable ads do not disrupt the page content we're trying to add. Acceptable ads are transparent without about being an ad. Acceptable ads are effective without shouting at us. Acceptable ads are appropriate to the site we're on, and it has all these great things, and then it's run by Adblock Plus, which is interesting, but okay. And then the idea is, though, that they actually put their money where their mouth is, and that in Adblock Plus, if you are approved by their team, which I'm not quite sure what that entails, it's like some 10-day process or whatever, your ads really will get through their ad blocker, and they enable it by default. They allow acceptable ads in Adblock Plus by default. So there is some effort to get there, you know, in relationship to all these ad blockers.
I've also seen an ad blocker recently. It was an Adblock plugin that specifically allowed only award-winning ads to be shown. So it would block everything else, and then it would only show award-winning ads, which I thought was really interesting. And I guess one thing that's going to come out of this whole storm that I think is probably really positive is just more awareness on the part of users and publishers and advertisers of like where the line is and how they can make experiences that don't suck. And I firmly believe that companies honestly, it sounds like Todd Garland, who's on this call, it sounds like he is doing his best to be making ads that don't suck. And I think that ad companies that are doing that, like whether they're exchanges or agencies or whatever, are going to weather this transition completely fine. The people who are going to get screwed are the people who were doing like essentially get rich quick schemes and hoping that they could do a bunch of bullshit before anybody noticed, or like creating like hostile UX for the users. You know, it just never works in the long term.
Yeah, so I just wanted to agree at this point that if we are being honest about advertising, if we actually just, you know, tell a story and explain why we need advertising, and that we actually, as a publisher, maybe actually need it to be present on the site, and kindly ask users to actually consider it. Sometimes it might work, sometimes it might not work. But I think that being honest is the only chance we've got here. Being honest, being transparent, and also not push the envelope too hard. I know a few publishers that actually now disable block people using ad blocker from accessing the site, right? And surprisingly, it works really well for them because they actually lose overall traffic, but they gain ad traffic, right? And I don't want that to kind of become the reality that we want. I don't want to live in this kind of reality where everybody's just blocking people using ad blockers. I think at some point, ad blockers might be necessary. But, you know, I think we need to kind of rethink the way we approach advertising, and the publishers and advertising work together in order to deliver ads.
You have a confessional, Todd?
I do. So, first of all, Lydia, thank you for going out on a limb for me, and I promise not to let you down in the next however many years I'm in this business. So I spoke with the folks at Acceptable Ads, maybe a month or two ago. And, you know, I have to say, like, I am the first person to be skeptical for exactly the reason that it's run by Adblock Plus. And, like, in general, I have this, like, you know, seething, I don't know what to call it, but like every time,
wasn't your favorite call that week.
Well, every time I like even just think about like the regular expressions that are written within these ad blockers, like my blood completely boils because there's a lot of like really stupid things that the ad blockers do that make web development in general more difficult. I will have to say I spoke with the guys at Acceptable Ads a month or two ago, and you know, I don't actually believe that they're horrible people, and I do genuinely believe that what they are trying to do with the Acceptable Ads initiative, and it's also important to note they are also distancing themselves from it, and they're going to let a committee run Acceptable Ads, which won't be just people from AdBlock Plus. It'll be people from ad companies, publishers. It'll be the community at large, really. We at BuySellAds signed on to the Acceptable Ads manifesto because a lot of the things that they say, like, you know, are pretty much in line with things that we have believed for 8 years. Additionally to what Lydia was saying earlier, like, I think a lot of what's happening now is really just going to force companies that, you know, may have actually been doing things the right way for the last 8 years to just step up and actually state on the record how they do things, what they're doing. We may find out that a lot of these things companies like BuySellAds have been doing, like, aren't actually that crazy. And they're very in line with the way people want ads to be on the web.
I'm not sure if you're willing to share anything specifically, but I'm sure your guys are rolling in data over there. Does it seem like ad blocking is on the rise and it's hurting your business?
No. Unfortunately, but also fortunately, we're not rolling in data because like we don't actually do anything with any of the data that we collect. The data that we do collect is quite literally just for very, very basic like impression and click-through rate type data. So there's nothing beyond that that we are calculating or looking at or anything like that. Depending on the site, I mean, the percentage of visitors using AdBlock is going to be anywhere from like 10% all the way up to some that are like 40%. Truthfully, it's not really hurting our business that much because things in ad tech are changing so quickly anyway. Ultimately, like the stagnant nature of display is probably what, you know, I don't want to say hurt, but what's changed our business the most. And that's why we're working on so many different kinds of ad formats and stuff like that.
I think I'm probably in the high range at specifically CSS tricks. I'm in the where Google Analytics is telling me 6.6 million page views and the buy sell ads tracking is at 3.6. So it's like, you know, it's 40 to 50 almost percent. And I have the kind of audience that loves running ad blockers, so that probably is about right, huh?
Yeah, and any developer heavy site's going to be, I'd say, 40% or maybe a tad higher in your case.
Well, I think it's fascinating, Lydia, to think about news deeply in that it's a totally different model. It sounds like you have 100% no advertising of any kind on the site. Is that do you feel you're like not worried about that in any way, that you think you can find a way for these things to thrive without that model whatsoever?
Well, I should say that we're not opposed to it. It's not that we have some sort of like spiritual opposition to ads in themselves. I certainly don't. I don't think anyone else in the company does. And we have considered doing things that might look like ads. Like I actually did a big round of user research on sponsored content recently. And one of the things that I learned is that a lot of the elements of sponsored content, for example, if you have an article that was sponsored by an advertiser and they put their banner on that article, a lot of users interpret that as an ad. Like when they see that, they're like, oh, here's an ad. They don't necessarily realize that the whole article was sponsored. Like they don't, like there's some users who get it and who understand the nuance there. And then there's some users who don't, which I thought was really interesting. And just doing that research and looking at the different options that are available to us, I really don't think that we're like actively opposed to running ads. It's just that right now it doesn't seem like the best use of our time, frankly. Like we make these niche sites and we have the potential to reach kind of the highest levels of government and the highest levels of thinkers across the world. And it just seems like there's other monetization opportunities that arise from that. That are worth pursuing right now that wouldn't be ads, you know? And especially since in order to reach those people, our content and our user experience has to be so good that it's risky, you know, to just like do like cheap ad auctions. Like we can't just go to some random exchange that we can't trust and be like, hey, you know, we'd like to inject your code on our site, because that's really risky. Like God only knows what they're going to do. So if we were going to do ads, we'd have to do a bunch of research, find the right partner, like negotiate the right opportunity, whatever. And it seems like that time right now is better spent finding clients and philanthropic donors and brand sponsors. And so like one of our recent projects, for example, we did MasterCard has a center called the Center for Inclusive Growth. And they're trying to bring financial services essentially to poor people, like in the developing world and stuff. This is a whole sort of concern on the UN and in big financial services companies and stuff like that. So they basically wanted to make a thought leadership site on that topic. And so MasterCard became a client of ours, and we helped them make a thought leadership site on the topic of financial inclusion. And it's not a Deeply site, but it's like a marketing service that we provided to them that is sort of like an ad, I guess, you know? I don't even know if you would call it sponsored content necessarily, because they didn't run any articles on our Deeply websites. We made them their own website, and we helped them set up the editorial, and we helped them set up the design and everything.
So you're doing what you're good at, not what you're not good at, and what's not working anyway. I think it's related to this. There's this very interesting tweet storm by Anil Dash that kind of goes into this, I think. And I'd like to read some of the tweets, because I think it's kind of interesting.
Oh, is this the adapt or die one, where he's like, that means some people will die? I love this one.
It does. It is the adapt or die one. So, you know, a few tweets down, it's saying, you know, okay, so you're a user and you've decided to block ads because ad blocking sucks. So your argument then essentially is publishers should adapt or die, invent and launch a new type of ad, unintrusive ads, ads that don't block, ads that are, you know, they're acceptable ads, some kind of a brand new way to deal with advertising for publishers. The problem is, you know, that's focusing on some brand new thing. That's like hiring new people to do that. You know, we're telling advertisers, we don't like your ads. We're going to block them. Please make better ads. It's just like this weirdly circular thing. So, you know, Anil's exact tweet is, so what you're really asking is that they divert resources from making the stuff you like to making the stuff you already don't like. So you're asking them to do this while their revenues are already declining, after saying you're okay if they disappear completely, which is crazy. And then he, you know, goes on to say, well, what about all these other ways? You could ask them to pay. Well, then it's only your wealthiest users that are going to be doing that. And I don't know. It's just adapt or die is a weird argument to make here.
I think the vast majority of people who are using ad blockers are basically just people who have completely run out of patience for the ad situation and don't know what else to do. I don't think they're, like, I have talked to very few people, actually, who think that there's a moral case for using ad blockers. Those voices are very loud in the internet debate, but I think among everyday people who use ad blockers, their entire thought process is just like, man, like, I mean, and if they're aware of the fact that this is supporting the websites they love, which they aren't necessarily, but if they're aware of that, then their entire thought process is like, well, I didn't want to use an ad blocker, but then I was reading this article and there was a takeover ad and I like tried to click away from it and I ended up on a porn site and I like don't know what to do. So I like have to use an ad blocker.
I think the data supports that. Most people say, I'm not 100% against ads. I think any poll that I've read supports that. It's something like only 15% of people that use ad blockers think that that advertising is kind of inherently evil. The most people think, it's a part of the, I think of it as the circle of life of a website. Is there's websites in which, you know, like Smashing Magazine or CSS Tricks, we give away everything we do for free based on ads. Because that's our product is our audience, essentially, and the people that advertise on our sites are products who don't get that kind of traffic because they're not giving anything away for free. They have a product or service, so they need to kind of buy their audience in a sense. And it's great. It's wonderful. It's the circle of life of the web. So, Todd, did it sound like you had something to say there?
I was just going to say, like, you know, like for the folks out there who are, you know, very concerned about their privacy and how ads hurt them and all this kind of stuff. It's like, well, like, don't you know that every time you swipe your credit card, like they're selling that data to people who can use everything that you've purchased in your purchase history to better target you for many things, right? Like direct mail, Facebook buys data from credit card companies to better target you online. So like, you know, if you have a cell phone, if you have a credit card and, you know, you believe that, you know, you're concerned about your privacy and that's why you're installing an ad blocker, it's like, well, maybe you should think about getting rid of the cell phone. Maybe you should think about getting rid of the credit cards too. And I know I'm being a little dramatic there, but like, that's kind of the point.
Okay. My tinfoil hat is going off. What does a website know about me? And why do naked ladies follow me around on the internet in little 300 by 250 blocks?
I would think that Buy Sell Ads doesn't know anything, right? Buy Sell Ads doesn't do any tracking, I would assume. I mean, I have no inside insight there, but it doesn't seem like the kind of app that does it. In fact, you ask us to put one script on our website, and I've looked at that script, and there doesn't seem to be any kind of tracking stuff in there. I think the case is that it's not one script that gathers all this information about you. It's like an aggregate. There's like, you make HTTP requests. Those HTTP requests have your IP address in them, and maybe just for some reason, and that request knows a little bit of something about you. It's from some music listening service, so it happens to know what song you're listening to or something. And that's just one tiny little bit of data, but it also has your IP address. So that way, you know, if you look at a ton of aggregate data that's IP address plus tiny little piece of data, they can kind of start stitching that stuff all together to kind of make a persona of this IP address and all of the things that go along with that IP address. I'm not sure exactly how it all works. I'd love to read a kind of an expose of all that, but I think that's generally how it's presented. Vitaly, did you have something?
Yeah, so basically what I don't want to kind of turn the conversation upside down again, but I think the point here in the conversation is to think about it's advertising on nothing on the website. I think it's really important for pretty much any website that wants to survive for the long term and kind of be successful is to kind of move away from actually relying on only one thing, be it only advertising or be it only sponsored content or anything else, right? So we really clearly decided from the very start that we're not going to have any sponsored content anytime. So we do have advertising, of course, and it is something that actually helped us, you know, become a publisher long term. So I'm really, really grateful to all the advertisers we had and we still have, of course. But it's important for us. It's a really, really fundamental and important to not only have advertising, but also have a different, more stable source of income. Because advertising is very, well, fragile in a way. You might have a lot of income in 1 month and then you have less income next month. But you need to plan a way ahead of time, right? So it's really important for us, again, to diversify and then create services or create products or create something that you can sell on top of the existing model that you have already. Because I'm not sure if you just go ahead and publish for free. Let's say Google AdSense, right? It used to be huge. It used to deliver a lot of money if you actually have a lot of traffic. Now it's, you know, it's not that much as much as it used to be. So I don't think that it's actually just a long-term strategy for small size. For bigger size, probably is. But still, I think it's really critical to diversify the business model. Otherwise, it's really difficult to survive in this new ecosystem that we have. With ad blockers on the rise, or if they're even going to stagnate, it still kind of makes up a big chunk of users and ad impressions that are just getting lost.
Well, and I mean, that's the case in any disrupted industry, right? You just have to diversify your model. Like taxi drivers also, you know, like would have been better off if they'd diversified their models. There isn't something special about media just because it's more of an upper middle class occupation. You know what I mean? Like the same people who are complaining that media has been disrupted and people are losing their jobs are often people who haven't had a lot of sympathy for other industries where the same thing happened. And it's kind of like, it's a pattern that you can replicate, that you can like look at and find. And it's like, yeah, you're in a disrupted industry, you diversify your business model, you like are cautious, you're scrappy, you're agile, or you move to an industry that's less likely to get disrupted anytime soon. And granted, that's difficult to predict, but like anybody who's working in media right now, like if you aren't trying to transition out of media, then you are accepting that's what you're going to have to do.
What do you think of when you, because you've been in publishing a long time, what do you think of when I say sponsored content? Do you have a specific type of thing in mind? Do you think of it as like a blog post that's, you know, written by the blog itself? Or do you have, I just think it's kind of an interesting, how it factors in here is interesting because it's generally not something that can be blocked, right?
Right. And that's one of the pitches that people are putting on sponsored content right now because of all this like ad blocking fracas. People are saying that sponsored content is great because it's a less obtrusive ad, essentially. And because people aren't, and because there's no way for users to mechanically block that sort of content. I mean, for me, I don't The way I normally think about it is that it's a piece of content that an advertiser paid to have exist on a site, but different organizations or, you know, in a publication, like there was sponsored content in the New Yorker like 30 years ago. There's been sponsored content in different media organizations over time. It's not a new concept. The only question is how well it's labeled and how much pressure the organization feels like it's under to give in to whoever's sponsoring it and what their demands are. And like typically, depending on the sponsor, like if the sponsor is an unethical sponsor, then they want it to be non-obvious. They want it to be promoting their service in a really transparent way. Like not transparent, but like obvious, right? But not to be clearly sponsored, right? Whereas like ethical sponsored content buyers will be like, yeah, you should make this as transparent as you want. Like our content is going to live or die on whether it's actually good. And so there are people who are doing sponsored content efforts. Like there are organizations where their whole game is like, okay, this gives us an opportunity to write on like a really popular website. So this is our chance to make amazing content that is along the same lines as our product and that will get attention back to our site because it's awesome. But then there's other organizations where it's like, okay, buying a sponsored article means that we buy an article that praises us directly and promotes our product and that users can't tell the difference between that and like a normal article in that publication. So there's a really strong line there. And I think that publications that can make that line obvious and can make that line stick are gonna be fine, you know? Like if a publication wants to run sponsored content, I don't think users really necessarily have a problem with it as long as they get it. Like as long as they know that that's what it is. Like the feeling of betrayal is what you really want to avoid. Like where like the feeling that your reader might get if they read some article and then they're like, oh my God, someone was paid to write this and it promoted this product. And the only warning I had was this tiny little like light gray sponsored text, like all the way at the bottom of the article. Like nobody wants your readers to feel that way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think a really good analogy for, publishers and advertisers and that whole relationship, it's really like very similar to like the food that we eat. And, you know, there are some people who take very good care of everything that they put on and in their body. And there are others who just really don't care. And, you know, and that's just how they prefer to live. And it's the same with publishers, right? Some publishers will take 5 cents for an ad because they really don't care. They just want as much money as they can possibly get. Whereas others are very, very particular about which advertisers, which ad networks, and about everybody that they work with and everything that they put on their site or put in their site. And that's kind of just a fact of life. So like, you know, it's not like there's this kumbaya moment where all of a sudden ads on the internet are amazing. But there's definitely going to be a divergence of quality content and, you know, the somebody did this and you won't believe what happened next kind of stuff on the web.
I'm kind of interested in Vitaly's, your editorial policy that you're 100% against sponsored content. I only, you know, I'd preface it with the fact that I kind of love it. Like, I do it on CSS Tricks, but I do it and it makes money for me and I like it and I do it through one of Todd's companies, but I think it's honest. I get a chance to look at the companies who are doing it. I get a chance to say what I want to say about that company. It's one of those things that like doesn't scale or whatever. I would put it in that category, but like, I don't care. That's not my problem. I work with companies I like and everybody's happy and everybody makes money, so whatever. So where does that editorial policy come from? Have you gotten that kind of feedback from users or you just don't like it?
So basically it has a long history because when we started the magazine, it was all about kind of putting your content out there. And we did all kind of weird things, to be honest. So we've been selling links. We've been putting advertising wherever we could. We had light boxes, which were advertising for a while, pretty much everything. So I'm as dirty as everybody else, just to make it perfectly clear at this point. But at some point back in 2009, it was very important for us to move away from this kind of view of being a blog towards being a professional magazine. As a professional magazine, we decided to establish a few rules or guidelines that would actually guide the kind of guiding principles for our work. So it was really kind of very important for us that every single particle that we publish, right, kind of delivers this objective value to the user, to readers, right? And with sponsored content, my problem with it is I kind of have a person coming to me, telling me what to write about, and I might feel very kind of, I might be automatically, just because they're giving me money, I will be opinionated about it. I can't be objective. I can't say any like bad things about them. Not necessarily bad things, but I will be leaning towards saying something nice just because I'm getting paid for it, right? And as a magazine, it's really important for us to be, first of all, independent and also objective about what we're writing. So we never had anybody telling us what to write about and how to write things, right? Which is also why we have a very clear separation of advertising and content. We don't want to put advertising inside of the content area, if you like. Obviously, we do have advertising units in the content area, but they're clearly marked as such, right? So, which I think is really, really important for us. Like having this separation, very clear separation between advertising and kind of editorial content is really, really critical for us.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, Vitaly, isn't that just because you have a different business model? Like, I mean, you probably have your own stuff that you promote that's technically a sponsored post, but it's just your own stuff. So, like, it's just like, it seems like you just have a different business model.
The main difference at this point is when we're writing about our stuff, it's like we are writing about our stuff. It's just for our community. This is something that we do with our community together. And this is a part of the entire smashing thing. While we're writing about an advertiser, this is an external thing coming in that we have to write about, right? Whether we want it or not. Because, well, we want it, of course, because we then would get money. But we don't want to have this kind of tension between our thing and the external thing. This is kind of the point here.
I don't know. I feel like you put sponsored in the post title and you have years and years and years of trust built up. And I feel like that's kind of like good enough. I mean, I like that we're arguing a little bit because that's kind of fun. But
I think the main point here is that for me, it's very important that whenever an article gets published, it really has this objectivity in it. It's not going to be influenced by in any way. So I don't want, to write a kind of publish an article that will pretty much clearly state that because it's sponsored content, it actually means that it is going to be influenced in some way. This is kind of a deal breaker for me. If it was somebody, yeah, like, for example, if I heard about the company doing a great product and we want to write an article about it, that's great, right? So we're going to write an object on cons. It's going to compare it with other tools, with other services, similar services, and it's going to be perfectly honest about it. Well, at least as honest as you can be from this perspective, right?
But there's also sponsored content, which is like, some marketer somewhere in a company or wherever decided that they wanted to commission some sort of like research article, essentially, or an article along a topic that they think that their audience would be interested in, and then just like have something on it that says that it's sponsored. Like Mike actually.
Yeah, but there are different kinds of sponsored content, of course. I mean, if it's a copy that's kind of written nicely in a nice way when it's connected to the audience and it's not just kind of trying to sell a product, kind of place a product on the site, that might work. I don't know. We never gave it a try. For me, it's really just important to have this very separation. We never actually had a situation where somebody, like an advertiser, would come to us and ask us to write a nice copy about a specific thing, a specific campaign that actually is good for the web. It's always, to be honest, more about the specific placement, product placement, or specific features that they want to market, right? Which is kind of a deal breaker for me.
Yeah, I wonder, I don't actually have a good sense of how you... So to be clear, at News Deeply, we aren't specifically running, we don't run sponsored articles on the Deeply sites right now. We've considered it. So our main business model so far has been either getting brand sponsorships and philanthropic sponsorships for Deeplys in a way where they have no editorial control whatsoever, or making separate projects for them that they do have editorial control over. So the MasterCard project that I mentioned earlier, where we made a separate site for them that wasn't a Deeply site, that's an example. But it seems like I've seen organizations like Mike, MIC, which is like a millennial, whatever, like news, politics, music site. They do sponsored content, and their system for doing it is that they have a writer who does all of their sponsored articles. And she works directly with a brand to sort of understand what themes they're interested in exploring and what they think their audience is into. And then she pitches them on articles. And then she writes an article about that topic for them. And that's kind of how the whole thing works. So it's just not the same as like writing a promotion.
The one point I actually wanted to make is that we actually have a very strict editorial procedure. So every single article has to go through a couple of experts and reviewers. It has to go back to the author, and it kind of requires a lot of points, a lot of work to be addressed. And in many cases, when we actually work with authors who actually want to just write quickly about something, it just doesn't work. It is a long process, and this is, we kind of take pride in it. And because the result is always really something very special. We publish maybe one article a day at most, but every single one is a good one. So this isn't really, in the past, 2008, 2009, it really didn't work at all. Because, even if an advertiser hires a professional writer to write about something, we have this really tough process, really tough control. You know, it's going back and forth. It goes through reviewers. It goes through lots of points that have to be addressed to make the article objective. And because you're trying to make it objective, kind of pushing back the advertiser's intention a lot of times, many, many times. So I just wanted to raise this point. Maybe it's just not working for us. I mean, it doesn't mean that it's not working for everybody. And I'm really happy for you, Chris, that it's actually working well and have a very established brand and reputation. It's really great. I think it's perfect. But in our case, I don't think this is the route we should explore. Yeah.
It's interesting. I don't want to sound too defensive over it, but I run sponsored content and I say, you know, this is influenced by money, but I'm a hard ass about it. And I only accept companies that I like, and I put sponsored right in the thing. And I'm saying, this is a company that has paid to be on this site. Whatever, you know what I'm going to say. I'm just saying the same things over and over. I'd like to wrap this up a little bit in that.
I know exactly what you're saying, Chris. I'm eating a bag of Doritos right now, and Doritos are delicious. Eat Doritos. Doritos.com.
Hey, but they don't sell those at Whole Foods.
Nice upsell, yeah.
Whole Foods can pay me to remove that.
With sponsored content, like, you know, it's not like you're right if you don't do it and you're wrong if you do it. Like, there are plenty of companies that are able to handle the editorial boundaries of dealing with sponsors paying them perfectly fine. And, you know, clearly very large companies, right? Like the New York Times has sponsored content. And while people who like to fill up the comment sections on websites sometimes, disagree with them, they handle it very well.
I think we should do a kind of a final thoughts thing. Lydia, is there anything that you'd like to plug on the show, or kind of a thoughts on the future of advertising, or where do you think this kind of thing is going to shake out?
I mean, I kind of had my rant earlier when I was saying that I think that certain ad companies are going to be okay and certain publishers are going to be okay. But yeah, I mean, for me, the bottom line is just that advertising companies... People, like, in general, in all industries, people who don't, like, rely on get-rich-quick schemes that are bad for their users are more likely to build sustainable businesses. Like, it's not a particularly complicated proposition, right? And, like, the fact is that a lot of the ads that we've seen on the internet over the last, like, 10 or 15 years have basically been get-rich-quick schemes. They've been things that are transparently bad for users, that users don't like, that trick users, or that otherwise make the audience really unhappy, and they were bound to eventually fail. And anybody whose business model was wound up in those ads is bound to lose. But if an ad agency, if a marketing agency, if a publication, whatever, if any of these companies is in a position to move towards ads that don't suck, I think they're going to be okay in the end. And it is possible that there's going to be some fallout, but there's already been fallout all over the internet. Like, publishing companies have been dying, you know, since the internet opened up. Publishing companies were dying before that. Publishing is a hard business. And it's due to all kinds of factors. Like, there's too much content, for example. People aren't buying books. Like, authors can't make a decent living anymore. Ads is just one more piece of the puzzle. And I firmly believe that people who focus on really, really, really good quality editorial and content and to make things that people want are going to win in the end.
Yeah, I feel like Lydia is just the right point, exactly. I think the only thing I would add on top of that is that I feel that we actually really feel very often that we have advertisers on one side, we have publishers on the other side, and we have readers kind of somewhere in the middle. And right now, readers want to be a part of the conversation. They actually decided what they want, right? And they made it very clear, or make it very clear what they want. So I think it's really important from a publisher's perspective to look into ways to diversify, to not rely only on one thing, be it sponsored content, be it advertising or anything else. This is really, really critical. Especially, of course, if you're a technical blogger, if you have like an audience like we, like us, right, Chris? And at that point, this is like, you have to diversify. From an advertiser's perspective, I think if we could just kind of create some sort of a system even for responsive advertising, right, which is something that we've been talking a lot, many, many years now, just to make sure that when ads get embedded, they embed it in a certain way, so it doesn't necessarily... I mean, of course, in the end, it's up to the publisher and up to the advertiser to decide how it's being pushed. But we need to have some sort of, I don't know, rules or guidelines that would actually make it clear through most, you know, major ad networks how those ads are going to be embedded. Because I feel like in many conversations I have with users, with readers, they really feel like they're pushing back at this point because the web is too slow, because out of, you know, 1, 2, 3 megabyte page, they get 3 or 2 megabytes advertising, and the rest is a little bit of content, right? So this is not right. We should be prioritizing content over everything else.
Todd, final thoughts on this debate?
This is going to make me sound like a jerk, but does this mean you're going to be removing ads from your site, Vitaly?
No, it doesn't mean that.
Okay.
It means that we are diversifying. No, this is mainly why we actually have all of those products, right?
Yeah, like I think diversification is great. I think any, you know, publisher whose quality, like Smashing, which has fabulous quality, should be diversifying. You know, I think ads need to be, you know, kind of like if you're a marketer, like, you know, paid advertising is just one piece of your budget and how you acquire customers, just as ads for a publisher should be one piece of how they monetize, right? But I mean, you know, at the end of the day, like there isn't going to be some large kumbaya moment. And, you know, I think quality content is going to be very clearly separated from all of the junk. And one way that you prove to your users that you're creating quality is by respecting them with respectable ads, respectable deployment of those ads, and everything that goes into being a good, responsible web developer. I mean, let's not forget, right? Like we're still in like the first inning of this game. The web is what, 20, 30 years old now. And you know, there's a lot of really horrible web developers out there. And I'm not saying web developers are to blame. But you know, we've got to expect that as things move so quickly on the web, techniques, implementation, all of those things are going to improve. There's a lot more technology in browsers today. A lot of which isn't even being taken advantage of by many ad tech companies. So, you know, I think this is all just part of moving the web forward. I, for one, I stand behind quality content. And that's kind of my view of the world and ad tech in general. It's quality or die. And that's just who I choose to work with.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks so much, everybody. Dave, you got any wrap-up stuff?
I just think it's interesting that both you and Vitaly experienced about 40% ad blockage. And now I'm starting to wonder, could you charge advertisers by like the kilobyte? That's something I'm wondering now, kind of like how you'd have to pay per letter beforehand. Maybe you charge per kilobyte. But anyway, okay. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening. And thanks everyone for being on our panel. Be sure to follow Shop Talk Show on Twitter. Subscribe, vote us up in your podcatcher of choice. Vote all. Go visit all these publications we talked about. And thanks everyone very much for a wonderful time. And yeah, well, Chris, you got anything else?
All right, see you later.